Our headlines this week have been dominated by the politics of the bulldozer. So, national interest also focuses on that aspect. However, as we do with national interest, we take that as a kind of a prop and then get into, wade into complexities of a completely different kind. Now, a dominant assertion in the traditional old secular circles is that good sense in Indian politics has been bulldozed now. And Islamophobia hangs heavy in the dusty air of democracy's rubble. Now, you can choose to agree or disagree with it. The risk is that once you choose either to agree or disagree, the debate ends here. So, you can declare the end of the republic, the idea of India, democracy, khatam ho gaya, diversity, all of it. Or you can pronounce the death of pseudo-secularism and the rise of a genuinely secular India and such good riddance that pseudo-secularism is gone. Either way, the debate is over. So, to take it forward, to carry it forward, what if we said, however, that both parts of the argument are correct. There's been a bulldozing and there is also Islamophobia hanging in the air. How does it work? It's just that there are nuances that do not leave it so linear or so straightforward. If the definition of the good sense was the way the secular versus communal binary determined political fortunes in India for six decades until 2009, it is correct to say that it's been bulldozed by the rise of the Modi Shah BJP and their politics. In no state of India with a sizable Muslim vote at this point, except probably in West Bengal, can you defeat the BJP on that old equation anymore? To that extent, the first half of the traditional secular lament is now accurate. This is the lament of the traditional old secular people, not just politicians, not just people in politics, but secular thinking minds. The second point, the second half, Islamophobia, is true as well, but it also has its complexities. It isn't Islamophobia in the sense that it would mean, say, in the westernized political discourse. It isn't some widespread fear of the Muslim way of life, religious practices, food, pan-nationalism, the power of some humongous collective embodied in the Ummah. In India, it is more the fright the non-BJP parties have developed in being seen to be friendly to Muslims. Now, they won't say anything rude about Muslims, but they would avoid attacking the BJP specifically for victimizing and othering the Muslims. That they will not do. They'd rather talk in the more broad, platitudinous sense of the party being sectarian, communal, anti-diversity, and so on. But rarely would they be seen at a Muslim event or occasion in the company of prominent and identifiable Muslims or fight for their grievances, if not causes. That is the Muslim grievances or causes. They won't even rise to speak publicly for Shah Rukh Khan and his son. There is a world of difference, for example, with the forthright way they backed the farmers' movement to the whispering criticism, if any, of the Modi government's crackdown on the anti-CAA movement. If anything, all traditional secular parties who fattened on the Muslim vote all these decades kept themselves out of this quote-unquote mess. Leaders of the key national or important political parties and regional political parties also have rarely raised a question on the continued incarceration of so many anti-CAA activists in Delhi under super draconian laws like UAPA. By the way, now the even tougher NSA, National Security Act, has been brought in for Jahangirpuri. Some of them did speak out in support of Disha Ravi, but that was farmers' movement. But Umar Khalid, Sharjeel Imam, Miran Haider, or those like Devangna Kalita, Natasha Narwal, who, though not Muslim, were seen to be with a Muslim cause. The party line across the secular universe seems to be, you can't afford to be seen close to the Muslims or to a Muslim cause. It is suicidal in today's electoral politics. Hypocrisy and cowardice in the name of discretion is the better part of secular valor now in our politics. Leave it to the courts. And if the courts won't act, you can always curse the judiciary for being spineless, and you curse the election commission, and indeed us in the media all the time, ye sab ke sab spineless hain. Now that's easy and safe. Cursing other institutions is easy and safe. What can we do? The argument is, when the BJP can sweep elections merely by maxing out on the Hindu vote, hum kya kare? In large parts of the country, especially in the political heartland, the Muslim vote doesn't count any longer. So what's the point of shouting, screaming and losing even more Hindu votes? That's what opposition parties suggest. They don't always say it. In public, they never say it. But when they speak to you or when they whisper, this is what they say. This is an acceptance, in my view. This is an acceptance of defeat and a mass bankruptcy of political imagination. Because when somebody comes in with one proposition in politics, as the Modi Shah BJP has done, there is no point just continuing to curse them and then saying, what can I do? Kuch nahi kar sakte. If you are in the game of politics, you have to find a way around it. And we'll see as we go along that some people seem to be looking for a way around it. It may not be the classical secular way, but they are trying in their own ways. Now, since bulldozers and Jahangirpuri is the hottest context now, first take a look at the statements of BJP's main political opponents. Barring the left, which had Brinda Karat at Jahangirpuri, barring the left, everybody has been careful to keep their prominent, easily identifiable leaders away from the spot. Their statements are about the BJP instigating communal riots, dividing people and so on. The squeamishness to call it for what it is, a targeting of the poorest Muslims, is a pattern by now. There's no surprise. A lumpenized Hindu procession with provocative slogans, weapons or offensive music in Muslim-dominated areas, especially in front of the mosques, that provokes riots, police action, and then the JCBs as a 21st century form of colonial style collective punishment. Now see particularly how Aam Aadmi Party responded to this. We acknowledge in fairness that neither the police in Delhi nor the municipal corporation is under them. But the language is important in political signaling. They said the bulldozers should first be taken to the homes of those BJP leaders who, in the past 15 years, have allowed Bangladeshis and Rohingya immigrants to illegally settle in Delhi. One said the bulldozers should be taken to the BJP headquarters, not because they unleashed such an atrocity on some of the poorest members of the Muslim minority in Delhi, who mostly voted for AAP, but because they, the BJP, allowed the same Muslims to wantonly carry out encroachment and unauthorized constructions. Now, illegal settlements and unauthorized constructions are quoted both by the BJP and AAP in their arguments, one for ordering demolitions, for justifying demolitions, and the other for taunting them, look, who's talking? It is just that the two rival parties are also engaged in competitive regularization of nearly 2,000 entirely illegal colonies in the capital. But then hypocrisy is neither new nor a liability in politics. The fact is that Aam Aadmi Party, of all mainstream parties opposed to the BJP, has fine-tuned this approach to a perfection. Attack the BJP, but never on behalf of the minority, because you know the minority will vote for you anyway, wherever you seem to be the front runner. Even in Punjab this time, if you look at the exit poll data, it looks like that 80% of Punjab's Muslims, who are mostly concentrated in one area, which is the Malerkotla area, about 80% of them, 8 out of 10, have voted for the Aam Aadmi Party, not the Congress as they used to in the past, or even the Akali Dal when the alliances were there. Now, when JNU was rocked with troubles and a bunch of student leaders were arrested for allegedly shouting tukde tukde slogans, how did Arvind Kejriwal respond? He said, if this government had control of the police, innocent students would be out of jail, but those that actually shouted the offensive slogans would be locked in. He didn't say freedom of speech, let anybody shout whatever slogans will not break my country. He knows his politics. Rahul Gandhi, on the contrary, landed up at JNU, and if it benefited his party in Delhi, it did not reflect in subsequent elections. Across states, you can see the same pattern. In Telangana too, while the alliance seems intact, we can see a subtle distancing between KCR's TRS and Asaduddin Owaisi's AIMIM. In Assam, the Congress would no longer be seen near Badruddin Ajmal. In West Bengal, since Prashant Kishore took charge of her campaign in the last assembly election, Mamata Banerjee has not been seen displaying a hijab at Muslim events or spending too much time with her huge minority. In Gurgaon, leaders of the Congress, the second largest party in the state of Haryana, they stayed completely away from the controversy over Muslims praying in public places. They've been so silent as to look complicit. From here on, two states need close watching. How does the unlikely alliance of Shiv Sena, NCP, Nationalist Congress Party and the Congress handle this challenge in Maharashtra? The BJP knows that both Shiv Sena and the Congress have their vulnerabilities. One has its Hindutva commitment challenged, the other has its secular commitment challenged in this alliance. That's why we have Raj Thackeray raising anti-Muslim issues like loudspeakers in mosques and then daring the Shiv Sena either to stop him or to let him do what he's doing. Issues Raj Thackeray is raising are issues that the Shiv Sena would have raised in the past. So that is to embarrass the Shiv Sena. The other would be Karnataka, because already we are seeing that a game of polarization is on in Karnataka. But some voices have come out from within the BJP, particularly from former Chief Minister Yediyurappa. So let us see how that will play out there. Now, nationally, we have reached a situation where no major political party would even hold a public iftar during the month of Ramzan. Nor many leaders would be seen at one. New Delhi is now in that odd phase of its history when foreign embassies and expatriates are the ones holding iftars and hosting Muslim and secular elites there. It was one thing when the BJP had shown its opponents it could win without any Muslim votes. Now it has so psyched them that they are paranoid about even being seen near Muslims or their causes, however justified. That shows how this political bulldozer has crushed their political imagination. Because when you face one dominant proposition, you need imagination to be able to counter it. You can see different parties doing it in different ways. Mamata Banerjee did it in one way in West Bengal. Aam Aadmi Party is doing it in its own way in Delhi. And to the extent that it matters in Punjab, and we will see the same from them going ahead in other states as well. But generally, it's made all of the anti-BJP parties, all of BJP's rivals, Islamophobic in that they'd rather not identify with Muslims in any way. And yet, they want the Muslims to vote for them. Why? To protect Indian secularism and themselves from the BJP. After all, what will happen if BJP comes to power? This, in fact, sums up the state of Indian politics today. It also explains why we said that we'll just use the bulldozer as a prop, but then wade into many political complexities. Because that's what national interest is all about. It has to deal with the complexity, if not more.